Okay, proximity alert firing now.
Okay.
Ready, retro thrusters.
The retros are go.
We're through.
Oh. Good Lord, that's clear space. I can't believe it.
Oh, a whole week in an asteroid belt.
My God. 2 hours sleep a night. I don't think I'll ever sleep properly again after that, actually. The chemicals we've got bouncing around in our bloodstream at the moment is just unreal.
I know. The incredible caffeine cocktail.
Oh.
Still, if there's one positive thing, right, it's that Cyclomedia has just been quiet. You know, it's just let us get on with it.
That's great, isn't it?
So, perhaps this is a sign of things to come.
Maybe it is. Who knows? Maybe we're in for a nice, peaceful ride for a little while now. What do you reckon?
Hi, boys.
Oh, balls.
The Ulysses, man's greatest achievement. A ship capable of travelling to distant galaxies. But a freak accident leaves the ship helpless. Its AI, damaged, dangerous, plays a deadly game with the two surviving members of the crew. If they indulge the machine's newfound passion for science fiction and fantasy trivia, it will permit limited access to the astrogation matrix and star drive. For astronauts Clive Ashenden and Rob Wickens, the choice is clear. If they ever want to see Earth again, they must define the A to Z of SFF.
A is for Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, the movie. Continue.
Oh, Matt, I love Buckaroo. It was such a great game. You know, you've got all the little bits of plastic with the mule, and, you know, you put the hammer on and then you put the boots on and you just don't know when he's just going to kick out at you. What a great game, but I don't quite know what it's got to do with science fiction.
What a card you are, Astronaut Rob. Oh, man. Yes, this is the box office bomb from the 1980s that went on to become a cult favourite.
Absolutely. It's it was kind of designed almost to be a cult favourite, wasn't it? It's never going to have what you call mainstream appeal.
Well, we say that with the benefit of many centuries hindsight, but at the time, they were so confident that it was going to have box office appeal that they actually flagged up the name of what would be the sequel in the end credits, you know, Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League.
What a movie that was when it finally came out.
But that's, you know,
that's a different story.
And with none of the original cast, sadly. So
it's unfortunate. Although, you know, that little bit with the Peter Weller hologram right at the end. That was spoilers. Okay, let's not spoil that too much, shall we?
It brought a tear to the eye.
It did.
But
so let's talk about the original then. The first and the best Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Where do we start with this one? It's an extraordinarily fiddly movie to talk about just because there's so much in it.
It is. I mean, I have to say, there are a lot of people that love this movie. I mean, I remember just back at Titan Station, it was just one of those movies that people would bring up if they were fans of retro stuff, and they would just sort of just gush over it. And I've seen this a few times, and each time I see it, I sort of think maybe this would be the time where I actually get this film. Because it's got so much stuff in it I should like. It's got all these great people: Peter Weller, John Lithgow, Ellen Barkin, Jeff Goldblum, Christopher Lloyd, Clancy Brown, Dan Hedaya. It's an amazing, massive cast. It's got all these great sci-fi pulp ideas. I mean, it's sort of inspired by Doc Savage and that sort of 30s, 40s pulp magazines idea. And you know, there's these, and there's sort of, there's lots of fun sci-fi things, lots of cool throwaway moments, but I just don't get it, Rob. Can you please explain this movie to me? Because it just sort of bakes my noodle every time I try and watch it.
I think the way you have to watch Buckaroo Banzai is to kind of almost view it as something like a With Nail and I or something like that. It's a movie that's very much about the moments rather than really the plot. It's about the moments. It's about the wild characters. It's about the great quotes, especially. I mean, the movie's just full of fantastic quotes and fantastic little bits and pieces. But you know, as a cohesive narrative, it does kind of fall to bits. But because there's so much else going on there, that you find yourself forgiving it. Well, I found myself forgiving it anyway, just because it is such a crazy ride.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that there's nothing in there I like, because there's quite a bit of stuff I like. I just find it makes my head hurt trying to sort of put it all together, and I have a real problem with all the stuff. With all the aliens that call themselves John, and yeah. Because their dialogue is so packed full of sort of weird stuff, like John Lithgow's Lord John Warfin character, you know, he speaks in his heavy Italian accent the whole time, and it's all these sort of garbled sayings. And there's all these really sort of clever ideas, like, oh, okay, they're aliens. They try and sort of take on our language, but they don't quite get the idioms right. And it's sort of, you know, done in a humorous way, but it's just packed so tightly. I find it really difficult to follow.
Yeah.
And I find that slightly, that sort of takes me out of being a just sort of, let it flow over me, because I'm having problems with it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I think to a certain extent, though, being so full means that it's one of those movies that does reward an awful lot of rewatchings. I mean, it's one that I've watched quite a few times over the past 350 years or so, or however long it feels like we've been out here. And there's always something new and there's always something fresh. Okay, there's a lot of, should we call it broad acting, particularly from John Lithgow, who kind of took the notion of the movie as a license to basically just completely go nuts with the acting.
Yeah, this is true. And so you get these wild sort of shifts in tone. That said, it's never a sort of, it never goes into a naturalistic place. It's always slightly heightened, so that's fine. And so it's one of these movies where I'm watching it and I'm enjoying certain bits, and then other bits I'm just not enjoying at all. But I sort of go with it because I know that sooner or later there's going to be another bit that I'm going to enjoy, and that gets me through to the end of the movie. But for me, this is an hour and 43 minutes, and it still feels sort of like meandery and without focus.
Yeah.
And that's sort of part of its charm. I get that. It's sort of 1 minute, you know, I mean, we should explain Buckaroo Banzai, you know, so, you know, Cyclomedia, anyone listening on the, you know, on the sort of space transmission that we're flying out there. I mean, Buckaroo Banzai is this sort of incredible, like super, almost superhuman character who is a mixture of sort of brain surgeon, rocket scientist, rock musician, you know, and he's just sort of
physicist, you know, race car driver. He is a man for all seasons.
He's the most famous guy on the planet. There's a what looks like quite a cool comic book that details all his adventures, comes out every week, apparently. You know, he's sort of the most, you know, he's followed everywhere by the press. He has his own sort of entourage of people.
The Hong Kong Cavaliers.
Who serve as both his sort of sidekicks in his adventures and also his house band.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
It's like everyone in this movie seems to not just be pulling sort of double duty, but sort of triple and quadruple duty.
Mm.
So it makes it sort of different. It's like, okay, oh, in this scene, now we're in this part, this movie. And in this scene, now we're in this movie, which is, you know, I'm not faulting the invention. I'm faulting, this movie throws you in media res in completely in the middle of what is obviously a long serial story.
Yeah.
And they've really put a lot, the writer, Earl MacRouche, has obviously put a lot of thought into the world building here, because there's such a lot of it. But it's like no one wants to cut any of it.
Mm.
That's what it feels like. Or whenever anyone's come up with an idea of, I've got a little comedy bit I've got, then the director, W.D. Richter, who is also, writer of 1978 Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Big Trouble in Little China, didn't really go on to direct much else, but, a really good genre writer.
Mm.
You just wonder whether he just let everyone just throw in all these little bits and pieces. I love the end credits, which are just mad, and it's sort of like this own little music video.
Yeah,
and that's probably the thing. I love Clancy Brown as Rawhide. Whenever I watch this film, I'm always really gutted at the point where suddenly his character, stops being part of the main narrative, because I'm like, well, why can't we follow Rawhide's adventures? But they're much more interested in the Buckaroo and Perfect Tommy and all that sort of game. But it's got so many sort of tributaries and sort of little branches of the main narrative. Sometimes it's frustrating, because where the movie goes, you're like, well, can't we just keep going down this way? And I was enjoying that bit, and then it just veers over somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that is probably down to the way Earl MacRouche actually wrote Buckaroo Banzai in the first place, because he's clearly a guy that's just so bulgingly full of ideas that he reportedly started a dozen different Buckaroo Banzai scripts, got about 30, 40 pages in, and then kind of got an idea for another one and moved on to that one instead. So I've got a quote here from W.D. Richter, who basically said that, he said that MacRouche would get 30 or 40 pages into a script, abandon its storyline and write a new one. MacRouche said... at the time, it's so easy to start something and then, since you're not really as serious about it as you should be, end up writing half of it. You shove 100 pages in a drawer and try to forget about it. Over the years, I started a dozen Buckaroo scripts that ended that way. So, and I think that's kind of what's happened. Basically, him and Richter kind of cobbled together a script out of all these different disparate threads and kind of just made something from the best of everything that was there.
I mean, I haven't read it, but I've heard or read various places that the novelization of this is actually, brings everything together and because it has space to breathe, and I can see how that might work, because it's not, when you sort of step back from it, the plot such as it is you can follow the plot.
Yeah.
It's not like at the end of the movie, I'm like, what just happened? It's just the process of the storytelling. It just feels really awkward and clunky and I wish I enjoyed this movie more, because I'm frustrated. Because it's like, why can't it be better? But at the same time, I can sort of see why it failed at the box office, because it's not I can both see why it failed, and I can also see why people love it, because it's such a weird little idiosyncratic thing full of joyous moments.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and, you know, that's great, but yeah, I find it a bit frustrating, I'm sad to say.
I can absolutely see where you're coming from, but I kind of embrace it for pretty much the same reasons that you kind of push it away, just because it is just so all over the place, and so just, you know, it's like a puppy chasing its tail or something like that. It's not a tight script by any means. It's self-indulgent, but at the same time, it's just so joyfully crazy that you just kind of, well, I feel that I just can't help but enjoying it. And, you know, you get to that end shot, that brilliant end shot where Buckaroo Banzai is marching down the centre of the California River, and he gets joined on all sides by the rest of his Hong Kong Cavaliers. And it's just such an iconic shot.
Yeah, I love that. And then it goes into the end credits, which, are, yeah, again, I love. And it, maybe because Clancy Brown comes back, you know.
Clancy Brown man crush, you heard it here first, people.
But it's like he's one of the. I mean, you know, I'm going to sort of also highlight Jeff Goldblum as New Jersey in here, which is one of his earlier roles.
Yeah,
and both of them, whenever they are one of the key players, I'm with the movie totally. And you know, because they seem to sort of be, they feel like real people in the movie, if you know what I mean. Whereas some of the other characters, they feel like characters.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's because it's so comic booky, and it's so it's kind of its own universe. You know, even I don't really mind that the characters are just so overtly kind of obviously characters, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, and some of that, you know, some characters come off better than others. I mean, Ellen Barkin as Penny Pretty.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those female characters from that time where it's not really she's not a character that's given much, if any, agency in this film, is she?
No, she's the girl, isn't she? She's the sort of love interest stroke, whatever, just, you know, the glamour, really, if you like.
Yeah, who may or may not be the identical twin of Buckaroo Banzai's dead soulmate.
So that's not uncomfortable at all, is it?
No, not at all. I mean, that's I did quite like the idea that he stops his massive rock and roll gig because there's one person in the crowd who's not having a good time, and then serenades her. I find that scene sort of amusing, but. Because I mean, Anna Barkin, you know, is a very good actress, and she does the best she can with what she's given. But whenever we go into that sort of subplot, it does feel like a subplot. It does feel sort of bolted in because they felt like they had to have a love interest for Buckaroo rather than, you know, she's organically part of the team. It's such a male film, you know, in terms of. Like, he's got his gang. The Hong Kong Cavaliers are all blokes, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. That's kind of a shame. There's obviously room for sort of a couple of an interesting couple of females in there as well. Specifically, as well, because the Hong Kong Cavaliers aren't just psychics; they're all sort of really top scientists in their own fields, in their own right, as well as being skilled musicians and everything. So it'd be kind of good to see something a little bit more inclusive there, but yeah, it was the era, really.
It was the era. I mean, but it's, I guess you notice it more because, I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis was in this film at one point. She played Buckaroo's mother in sort of flashback scenes that were deleted which you can sort of find if you look around on the, you know, galactic YouTubes. But if you look very carefully on the dashboard of his jet car, you'll see that she's in a photograph. So there you go. But
she is in it then.
But, you know, there were a number of scenes that sort of got deleted scenes, and you sort of, you know, it has that feeling of a movie where connective tissue has been cut out because it was so sort of sprawling and they were trying to get it down to a manageable length.
Mm.
But, you know, I'm going to sort of finish my sort of issues with this film on a positive note by saying I don't know why, but for some reason I love the scene where it is, and it's like just a little bit of sort of shoe leather, a little connecting scene with Peter Weller is leading Jeff Goldblum through this sort of through the Hong Kong Cavaliers base, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's all this equipment and stuff. And in apropos of nothing, there is a watermelon which is sort of stuck in the middle of this bit of scientific equipment with like electrodes stuck in it and something. And Jeff Goldblum goes, "What's with the watermelon?" or words to that effect. And Buckaroo just goes, "Oh yeah, I'll tell you later." It's never mentioned again. It has no, you know, it's not like this isn't like a Chekhov's gun thing. It does not, no one gets shot in the third act here. It's like,
with a watermelon.
There's just lots of little kind of weird things like that. But I just, that scene tickles me. So there we go.
Yeah, I think that's probably the joy and frustration of Buckaroo Banzai, kind of squeezed into one tiny little bit of action there. It's a real curate's egg, isn't it? The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai. I think you can love it and hate it for exactly the same reasons. Your mileage may vary with this film, is I think what we're trying to say here. Personally, I think I enjoy it more than Clive does for no real valid reason that I can give. just because it is such a delightful mess, because it is just such, you know, this huge slumgullion of all sorts of different science fiction themes and weird little nod backs to different bits of pop culture and what have you. I mean, you know, the whole sort of Doc Savage stuff and just everything about it is it. If you've not seen it, I do urge you to at least give it a go and make your own mind up about the movie, because it's pretty much one of a kind, really. I can't think of any other movie that is quite like it in terms of what it does.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. It's a unique film. I think the danger is where often this movie gets recommended, as it was to me. It's like, oh my God, this movie is so incredible. It's the best movie ever. I love this film. And then you sit down watching it, expecting it to be something that it's not,
yeah,
if you see what I mean. But, you know, it's an odd duck, and God bless it for that, you know.
More films like that, I'd say, just or maybe not. All right, Cyclomedia, you've not given us a break after coming out of that goddamn asteroid storm, but, you know, at least let us know we've given you what you need for the Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
Remember, wherever you go, there you are.
I'm going to take that as a yes, and frankly, I'd rather be somewhere else other than here. What do you reckon, Clive?
Yes, let's get the hell out of Dodge. Quickly, fire up the engines.
Okay, we are up to speed. Okay, ready with your eye. Let her loose.
3, 2, 1, hit it.
Bye now. And there you go, one down.
The A to Z of SFF was written and performed by Rob Wickings and Clive Ashenden. The show was produced and edited by Rob Wickings at All Hallows Post of Reading, the finest sound available anywhere. Would you like to know more? Go to www.allhallows.reading.com. the A to Z of SFF.com. Like us on Facebook as the A to Z of SFF, or follow us on Twitter at the A to Z of SFF.